Welcome to Because the Beatles, the podcast about the Beatles, everything about the Beatles, 24/8. I'm Erica.
And I'm Allison. And before we start, please be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, or stream us on Spotify. And if you're enjoying BC the Beatles, feel free to leave us a preferably five-star review so other Beatlemaniacs can find us.
And don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter/X, and TikTok. We'll be posting videos, photos, and more from this episode and beyond. And you can also email us at bcthebeatles@gmail.com.
And we are back after a couple of weeks of really interesting content. Mm-hmm. Erica, you were on a Cliff Richard podcast, which is pretty cool.
Yes. And I think we're going to have David on to talk more about Cliff, because the relationship between Cliff and the Beatles, and even between George Martin and Cliff's producer, Norrie Paramore, is so interesting.
Oh, my gosh. That would be so cool. Yeah, I didn't really know much about Cliff Richard. Obviously, I know he's like the most longstanding British male Elvis type ubiquitous singer of all time. But as far as his career specifics, it's really cool to know more about him.
Yeah, he's fascinating, not only because he's such an institution in Britain, but because he has had so many different types of music that he's delved into. He's done musicals, he's done plays, he's done foreign language music, he's done rock, he's done standards. Like, he does everything. So it's so interesting to see all of the different ways that Cliff has had a career.
Yeah, totally. Because, like, you know, the Beatles sort of discovered him because he started with skiffle, right? But it's like, I don't even think about him with skiffle, because he has so, like you say, so many different types of music in his repertoire.
Yeah, he went so much farther than skiffle, and he went into so many different areas. And he is very much like the subject of today's podcast, in that this is another institution in Britain that isn't quite as well known in the States.
Amazing segue.
Thank you.
That was awesome. But yeah, we're really, really, I mean, we say this every episode, but really, we're so excited today, because when we first started this podcast way back in 2018, one of the reasons we called it Because the Beatles was because we wanted to be able to talk not only about the Beatles, but anything sort of adjacent to them in any sort of way, because the Beatles. And one of our original reasons was because we especially wanted to do today's episode, and we're finally doing it. And today is our Syllisode. We're doing our episode on Cilla Black. We're so excited.
Yes, I'm so excited.
Yes, it took us a long time, but we're finally here, and I'm so excited. And, you know, Cilla, she's really unique in the Beatles story, because she was probably their closest female peer, because she was also the only woman managed by Brian Epstein. And she was one of his favorite artistes, as he called them, and someone who was really particularly close to him personally. So later in her life, as a lot of our listeners will know, especially our listeners in Britain, she became known as a TV presenter, and she was the recipient of an OBE for her contribution to entertainment. She had 19 top 40 singles in the UK, which is unreal. She had 2 number one hits, Anyone Who Had a Heart and You're My World, both absolutely gangbuster songs. And she recorded 15 studio albums. Today, we're focusing on the beginnings of her fame. We'll certainly get into her TV career a little bit later, but the beginnings of her fame, her hit making, and full disclaimer, we're going to be referencing the amazing made-for-TV miniseries Cilla. And we cannot recommend it enough. We're obsessed with it.
Obsessed.
Like, I don't even know how many times I've watched it. I subscribed to Acorn TV for like a year or two just to watch that over and over. And, you know, obviously we don't take it as fact. It's a mini series, but, you know, we can't not refer back to it.
But if you hear something we talk about that is in the mini series, we did fact check what we're talking about today. So,
yeah. And to be fair, the miniseries is pretty faithful,
really,
in a lot of ways. They did their homework and it is fucking awesome. Mm-hmm. I can't say it enough. So, yeah, let's talk about Cilla. So exciting. Her early years, obviously, we all know she was born in Liverpool, and her birth name was Priscilla Maria Veronica White. Quite a name. She was born on May 27th, 1943. She grew up in a flat above a barber shop in Liverpool's quote-unquote Scotty Road, which is short for Scotland Road. And it was named this way because it became a kind of thoroughfare, ultimately ending up in Scotland. But it was a really, really rough neighborhood. It was primarily Irish Catholic, which back then the divide between Protestant and Catholic was pretty contentious. Like, they really didn't like to intermix. They got into a lot of scrappy fights. Scylla herself was Irish, and her household was really, really religious. So you can imagine the deep roots within the Catholic faith there.
Scylla was saying in that interview that she had some issues with bringing boys home, because not only could she not bring the proddies home, the Protestant boys.
The proddies, yes.
But if a boy had said to her, "Scylla, I want to walk you home," and she wanted him to, and they would say, "Where do you live?" And she says, "Oh, Scotty Road." They would be like, "No, no, no, thank you.
Hell no." Not going to fuck with that. But her family was really close. Her father was a dock worker. Sometimes he kind of found it hard to get work. So really, her mother stepped up and she did what she could to earn for the family. One of the things she did was she sold secondhand clothing. She also, I think, did a little bit of a hairdressing gig. She had a lot of little talents that she relied on. But her father, you know, was a harmonica player. Her mother was a singer. So there was always music in the house. Scylla would later say that her mother's work ethic was a massive, massive influence on her, which makes sense. You know, Scylla worked all her life. Her mom also was known for suffering no fools. She was like, no bullshit. She taught Scylla that women could speak up for themselves. They didn't have to be beholden to a man. And, you know, Scylla really also carried that into her wit and her humor. That was really her trademark in entertainment and why she was so magnetic and electric, especially on TV later. So growing up, one of the rituals that she would do with her mother would be to go to the cinema multiple times a week, which, considering, you know, this was post-World War II, that was probably pretty dear for them, especially when money was tight. But it really had an impact, obviously, on Scylla to want to be in entertainment ultimately. She didn't really love school, like a lot of our friends in the 60s, especially in Liverpool. But she ultimately left with the recommendation, quote unquote, "Priscilla is suitable for office work."
Oh, that makes me feel sick.
No. Oh, God. She eventually would attend a commercial college and she did gain office skills. So there you go. You know, she played to her recommendation. She became a typist at a construction company, BICC, which stood for British Insulated Calendars Cables. Quite a tongue twister.
Yeah. Her parents were very proud of that recommendation for office work, too.
Ah, well, considering, you know, it's coming out of the manual labor side of, you know, the gritty Liverpool streets, probably pretty decent recommendation.
Oh, yeah. And just to be clear, in 1962 or whenever she got that recommendation, that meant she was an excellent student. That meant that she was suitable for something, like you said, more in a higher class level than maybe what her parents were able to attain. They had high hopes for her in that area.
For sure. I mean, that's what parents generally want, right? Is their kid to supersede them in life. So there you go. You know, office work would be that. But, you know, Scylla was not super interested in it, obviously. She had her sights set on something really high. She was young. She was energetic. She wanted to be a star. And like a lot of young people her age, she would go to the Cavern Club. We talked to Ken Womack about Mal Evans would escape there from his post office job, you know. So Scylla was going to the Cavern Club for their lunchtime sessions on her breaks from the office. It wasn't too long after that she herself became part of the Merseyside music scene. As legend has it, and this is actually not apocryphal, it's real, she began working as a hat check girl at the Cavern Club. That was kind of how she was known for a bit, until she started getting on stage for impromptu performances. And that started impressing the Cavern's regulars, including John Lennon. He was really impressed and he started really championing her talent. She decided to model her sound after Frankie Lyman, who we might know is he was a Black American teenage sensation in the 50s, who did most famously maybe "Why Do Fools Fall in Love?" And that's really interesting because her voice, I always think of as sort of like a lower, more like womanly tone. But, you know, Frankie Lyman was very famous for his falsetto.
Frankie was only 15 when he recorded that song.
Which is crazy.
I know. I mean, the story of Frankie Lyman is horrible and tragic.
Oh, he is.
So many ways.
Yeah.
But looking at little 15-year-old Frankie, he did have a voice similar to young Michael Jackson, almost, that his range was something that could have been suitable for a woman or for a man. And he kind of had a very strident, piercing sound to his voice with a very like easy flip up to the falsetto. And Cilla does have those same qualities.
Yeah, it is no small feat to be able to do that. So she started guest starring with other bands, including Roy Storm and the Hurricanes and the Big Three. You know, a lot of the Merseybeat acts that were surrounding the Beatles that maybe didn't get as big as the Beatles. And calling up a quote unquote girl singer, which is really what she was known as at the time, it was kind of a novelty. You know, there were only a few girls in the city that were really, really good at singing, entertaining, and Cilla was one of them. You know, she could kind of do it all. Ringo later recalled, quote, she was in the cavern doing the coats. And all the bands would call her on stage saying, come on, Cilla, give us a song. And she'd be, oh, no, no, I couldn't possibly. But you couldn't keep her back. She'd trample on you to get on up on stage. I love that she demurred a little bit. And then she's like, oh, JK, like, let me at it. And Ringo, and this is portrayed in the Cilla miniseries, their special relationship. He was friends with her the longest, and he used to hang out at her house a lot in his pre-Beatle days. He's the one who coined her Swinging Cilla, which she later became known as in the later 60s. Although John Lennon, in his own humorous way, preferred to introduce her as Cyril.
Swinging Cyril.
So as she's getting into the cavern scene, the famous promoter, Sam Leach, who also worked with the Beatles, he booked her to play at the Zodiac Club on Duke Street, or depending on what you believe, the Casanova Club. So sources kind of differ on where she first performed as a solo artist. She did, however, work as a waitress at the Zodiac Club, which could be a footnote in her career, except that's where she met her future husband, Bobby Willis. And Bobby would have a huge impact, obviously, on her life, but also her career later. And their relationship and Cilla is so cute. I'm just going to say it.
It is. It really is.
It ships itself. Like, they are ultimate ship.
A little tension, which we'll talk about in a minute, but.
I know, but they ship so well.
I know. They're very cute.
So if you notice at the top of the show, her name is Priscilla White. However, she became Cilla Black because a piece of Merseybeat kind of fucked up her name. And she was accidentally referred to as Cilla Black, and it sort of stuck. She was like, that's good. I'll keep it.
What's a name in rock and roll in the 50s and 60s? Who cares?
I know, right?
Change it again.
Everybody's shifting around, you know. She's like, oh, I'll just switch the color of my name. That's perfect. And so she signed her first contract with a neighbor whose name was Terry McCann, but it was never honored because she signed as a minor. Luckily, thankfully, yep. Because John Lennon introduced her to Brian Epstein. However, when she auditioned for Brian, it was really bad. It was really bad. It was a failure. And Brian, you know, was not really interested after that. He had tried to sign another girl singer, Beryl Marsden, but she turned it down, which not a great decision, because no. I only know of Beryl Marsden. I mean, I know she was a girl singer from Liverpool, but I really know her from the Cilla miniseries. She's portrayed in there.
Yeah, she did perform a little bit at the Cavern maybe recently in the past 5 years or so.
Oh, really? Oh, that's awesome.
But I don't think that she quite had the career she could have had she signed with Brian.
Yeah, and, you know, I thought she was related to Jerry Marsden, but I don't think she is. So that's interesting. Maybe they're cousins, like distant cousins, but I thought maybe that was his sister or something, but no.
I believe that Marsden is another name that's not her real name. So not only is she not related to Jerry, but that name is not hers.
She co-opted it. I wonder if Jerry was pissed about that.
I don't know. How many Marsden's are there?
She's stealing my name. Yeah, I know. Is that a big family name? I don't even know. She's playing off the pacemakers. The right. Pacemaker's name. Well, luckily for Cilla, a year later, Brian caught her act at the Blue Angel, and he did sign her on September 6th, 1963. Again, the only woman ever signed to his enormous artist roster.
Ever.
Ever. And Brian thought she had a sort of Judy Garland type quality, and he wanted to really nurture it, which it makes sense. She does have a certain Judy Garland type quality. And of course, he and Cilla became very, very close personally. They were very, very good friends. Once she was signed, Cilla and Bobby moved to London, And Brian sort of insisted that Bobby style himself as her road manager instead of boyfriend, very common at the time, especially where Brian's artists were concerned. They all had to be available, single, to be more relatable to the teenagers and to create sort of like an aspiration. I'm sure all the boys like looked at Stella and thought she was super pretty, and a boyfriend would have, you know, kind of killed that. And so Bobby, as we get into talk a little bit about him, he wasn't just her personal manager or boyfriend. He was also a songwriter. And famously, he wrote the B-side to her first single, which was the Lennon McCartney, Love of the Loved. Great song. And he wrote many other songs for her throughout her career. And Brian, and this is all, again, portrayed very well in Scylla miniseries. I almost said Scylla documentary. I almost said Scylla documentary. But yeah, so Brian wanted to sign Bobby as a singer in his own right. And Brian was sort of inspired by, he really, really liked Bobby's natural platinum blonde hair. And holy shit, when we say blonde, it was blonde, blonde. It was like this blonde that you pay like $500 to get at the hairdresser.
Yeah.
He was blessed with this hair.
When I first watched the Scylla, now I'm trying not to say documentary. When I first, just
sorry.
When I first watched the Scylla biopic, I had to Google him immediately because I didn't understand why her boyfriend character had this crazy, like, white blonde hair, but that's him. That's just who he was.
Yeah. Wild. Yeah. And in fact, Brian wanted to market him as quote unquote the blonde from Bootle, which is questionable.
And he was like, I'm not even from Bootle.
I know. I don't question Brian much, but holy shit.
He wanted a blonde.
Yeah. Scylla said, you know, Brian genuinely wanted him to sign, but I made him say no. There was only room for one ego in our relationship, and this ego had landed. I knew it couldn't work, so he had to choose. I felt terrible about it, but...
I think it sounds pretty terrible.
Yeah. Damn, Scylla. That's cold. It's real cold.
I guess she knew what she needed and she knew him too. So maybe it wasn't as, you know, heartless a decision as it kind of sounds on its face.
Yeah. You know, and ultimately it really worked out because by all accounts, Bobby and Scylla really made up a great team. You know, she was the entertainer, she was the artist, and he ended up handling her finances and bookings. And, you know, he was very honest with her. He made no bones about telling her, like, it was in regards to her performances, which she ultimately appreciated.
Yeah, yeah. I think they both felt, too, that while he was a very good singer, he didn't quite have the stage presence. So I think another argument for this was that he probably wouldn't have made the splash that he would have wanted or that she did.
Yeah, totally.
All things considered, maybe it was just better for him. He was very good with the management and the money and the bookings and all that to work together as a team on her career, which they did for the rest of his life.
Yes, yes, it worked out.
Yeah. So with Brian and her boyfriend, Bobby, by her side, Scylla made her way into the public eye. Soon after signing with Brian, she was introduced to George Martin, who quickly signed her to Parlophone Records. George did champion her. He did like her voice, but he had trouble with her very heavy Scouse pronunciations, trying to correct her over and over. But Scylla really never lost her Liverpool accent. And at the beginning of her career, it was very strong, similar to George Harrison on, like, Do You Want to Know a Secret? Like, early George, very heavy Scouse. I think when it comes out, it's very cute, and it's kind of a hallmark of who Scylla was, too. So I'm glad she didn't use it totally.
Well, it's a great accent.
It is. So 3 weeks after meeting George Martin, her first single, Love of the Loved, Lennon McCartney tune, was released, ultimately peaked at number 35 in the UK. Not an incredible success. They were a bit disappointed about it. But her next single would be massive. It was a number one hit, and it was called Anyone Who Had a Heart. And this was written by Hal David and Burt Bacharach, who she ended up, of course, collaborating with more than once in her career. Brian found the song while on a trip to the US, and it was already a huge hit for Dionne Warwick, who was at that time Burt Bacharach's go-to solo female singer. Scylla, however, had already known the song. She loved the song. She was very excited to record it. Then George Martin found her next number one, a dramatic Italian ballad called You're My World. And this second number one made Cilla the second woman in UK chart history to have two successive number one hits. So go, Cilla.
And they couldn't be more different. You know, I mean, anyone who had a heart in You're My World are sort of those melancholic, longing songs. But you think of like Love of the Loved and it's straight up pop. You know, it's so funny because I remember when I first heard You're My World way a long, long time ago, I was like, this is Cilla Black. Because, you know, I was used to like the Love of the Loved, you know, like the poppy. Yeah, it blew my mind.
There was never really anything that they settled on that was this is a Cilla style. Because she was very versatile. She did have this dramatic ballad voice. You know, she does have kind of a musical theater tone to her. Mm, you know, in the same way that Cass Elliot does.
Oh, yeah.
Very dramatic. And it gives you chills down your spine when you hear it. You know, and there are very few female singers in the pop world who can do that. So finding songs like You're My World, you know, very few women, I think, would have been able to take that on at the time.
I agree. Yeah. And it's also a contrast between the songwriters. You know, Lennon McCartney, obviously more pop leaning. I don't know if there's a song in their repertoire that's like a Hal David Burt Bacharach tune. Those are so distinct. And like you say, like have sort of musical theater like quality where they're just sweeping. And yeah, I think it does speak to Cilla's breadth as a performer and a singer, for sure, that she can handle both.
Yeah. And these number ones, these made an impact because this single, these number ones, they introduced Cilla to the rest of the world, to Europe, Australia, and the US. And eventually, she didn't make an appearance. She made three appearances, actually, on the Ed Sullivan Show. Her first was on April 4th, 1965, which was a year to the date the Beatles were making history for holding all top five spots on the U.S. Billboard charts. So this is like a year of the British invasion, a year of Beatlemania. Then Cilla makes her appearance. She didn't make the same splash in the U.S. that she did in the U.K. She did come back to Sullivan two more times in 65 and later in 66. But she really seemed to be more focused at this point on the UK, on making a name there and being famous there. She had even said at one point that she didn't like touring in the US. It made her too homesick. It was too far. So I think it was partially her reception on Ed Sullivan, but also partially a preference. She just wanted to be more close to home. But throughout the mid-60s, Cilla continued to have a string of hits in the UK, including a new Hal David Burt Bacharach song called Alfie, which was the theme song to the movie of the same name. This is immortalized not only in the Cilla biopic, but in a video of the session that they did in Abbey Road, Studio One. They had a full orchestra there. Burt Bacharach was playing and conducting, George Martin behind the controls. Brian was there. Brian had set up the filming. I'm not sure exactly why they wanted to capture it, but they did. Cilla had said that this session was one of the most demanding sessions of her entire career. It was long. It was over 3 hours long. And Abbey Road Studios usually didn't even allow people to book more than 3 hours. They just kept going and going. Burt Bacharach insisted on 31 separate takes. Cilla was frustrated. Burt was frustrated. George was frustrated. Brian was frustrated. The orchestra was tired. Finally, George Martin cut this session short, telling Burt that he thought they probably captured the magic back around take four.
Wow, that is a lot of overkill there, Burt.
Yeah, I don't know what he was looking for, but that recording of Alfie is lovely. And I think they did get it. I don't know which take they used for the ultimate recording, but I'm sure George Martin was correct. But despite the grueling session, Burt Bacharach thought very highly of Cilla. He later said, quote, "There weren't too many white singers around who could convey the emotion that I felt in many of the songs I wrote. But that changed with people like Cilla Black." And it did. You know, this is Barbara Streisand level of emotion in a ballad. And she was able to do it.
Yeah, absolutely beautiful.
It is. It is. It's one of my favorite songs. It's one of my favorite songs of all time. It's one of my favorite Cilla songs, obviously. And it's unfortunately been overshadowed. The song was a top 10 hit in the UK, but when they finally put the movie Alfie together, the producers decided they wanted an American singer to sing the theme song. And so it ended up being sung by Cher, her version is in the movie credits. And Burt Bacharach's go-to vocalist, Dionne Warwick, also recorded a version. I still think Scylla's is the best, and I wish more people would listen to it.
I agree. It's very interesting how Dionne Warwick is really Scylla's American counterpart, because I think of them as so different, you know, their styles, and even their voices are so different. But yeah, I do feel like most people know Dionne Warwick's version the best. Maybe not in the UK, but definitely in the US.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Scylla didn't love the song in the beginning when she got, when she was given the song, her first reaction was, "Alfie, that's what you call your dog." So she wasn't, didn't love it, but she ended up loving it over time.
Aww.
So during this time, when she was recording all these top 10 hits in the UK, they were starting to sow the seeds of Scylla's future as a television institution in Britain. She was one of four female performers who helped define the look and feel of swinging 60s London through ITV's music and dance show called Ready, Steady, Go. So she, along with Dusty Springfield, Sandy Shaw, and Lulu, were kind of like the poster women for what it was like to be a swinging 60s girl. Their hairstyles, they wore a lot of Mary Quant and Mary Quant-esque fashions. So they set the pattern for what it meant to be mod. And in addition to her voice and her fashion, these TV appearances showcased the third element of Scylla that really made her a superstar, which was her personality. Like the Beatles and many of the British Invasion Merseyside acts, she brought that same northern sense of humor that made the Beatles so endearing. But as a female, as, you know, a little younger, at least younger looking, she was the same age as the Beatles, she brought this sense of innocence and familiarity to the whole thing. I think she really made people feel like they wanted to be her friend. Abbey Rhodes' Colin Colback in an article called her, quote, "one of the most authentic pop culture performers in contemporary history." He also noted her, quote, "unflappable improvisation skills and an instinct to engage any audience on a personal level. She was simultaneously a superstar and a relatable everyday person."
I think that definitely comes out in any appearance you see of her anywhere. If she's interviewed, she is automatically likable. Like, definitely want to be one of her girlfriends.
Yeah, she's so relaxed. She makes jokes. She's just, you know, she's not afraid of anybody.
No, super casual, super, like, her clapbacks are great. Everything about her, like, delivery is perfect. And these performances, these appearances on TV where she was able to really showcase her personality, Brian took note of it. He was like, this is going to be her calling card. And he subsequently booked her on a bunch of other UK variety shows. And she even had her own special, Scylla at the Savoy. And that was one of the most watched music specials at the time. He also got her a few spots as an actor. But obviously, you know, that wasn't going to be as successful for her as hosting, because her appeal, again, came from her personality, her improvisational skills, her wit. Everything about Scylla herself, as opposed to acting Scylla. So 1967 rolls around. Very unfortunately, Brian dies at age 32, very young, the height of his career. But one thing he had done, and this is apocryphy, but the legend goes that when he passed away, there were contracts beside him on his nightstand for Scylla to host her own television show on the BBC. Whether that's true or not, he did set up that deal before he died. The unfortunate part is that the relationship between Scylla and Brian had sort of soured a little bit towards the end of his life. Brian, because I will defend Brian till the day I die. you know, Brian, he was at the height of his career, but he also was sort of at a crossroads with the Beatles, where he wasn't sure. He was kind of worried if they were going to extend their contract with him because they weren't touring anymore. And so he was really kind of focusing on them. He was focusing on some of his other artists. And Scylla sort of felt like he wasn't paying that much attention to her or her career. And especially because her last two singles hadn't reached the top 10, whereas, you know, she had had those number ones. She'd had so many singles in the top 10 before that. And she was sort of thinking, like, is it Brian? Is it because he's not giving me the same attention as he is to the Beatles, for example. But you can kind of say he set her up for the rest of her career, because obviously she became known as this world famous presenter. And it begins with this contract with the BBC that he secured. So after Brian dies, Bobby comes back into the picture. Bobby never left the picture. He took over as Scylla's only manager for the rest of his life. He was her manager. So after being together forever, the two finally married at Marylebone Town Hall in January of 1969, where Paul and Linda were also married. Bobby and Scylla got married a couple months before they did. And they stayed married until Bobby passed away in 1999. And she never remarried after him. Mm-hmm. Very sweet. Very mm-hmm. sweet. And so in 1968, a year after Brian died, a year after he secured those BBC contracts, she began hosting her own variety musical show called Scylla on the BBC. And the show's theme song was Step Inside Love, another great song written by Paul McCartney, performed by Scylla. Paul was really inspired by Scylla, her welcoming personality, and just everything that made Scylla Scylla. And the point of the song was encouraging viewers to step inside Scylla's TV home during the show. So this song became a top 10 hit. The show ran from 1968 until 1976, which is quite a good run for a musical variety show at the time.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I never understood the meaning of that song until recently. I thought it was talking something more abstract about stepping inside the emotion of love. No, he's talking like somebody's step inside love. Come into my house. It's not abstract at all.
He should have put a comma there. Step inside, comma, love. So we could blame Paul.
Punctuation, Paul.
It's a let's eat grandma situation.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right? Paul, come on.
We almost eat grandma. So it's your fault.
Almost did. Yes. What the hell, Paul?
So Scylla went on to transition into this television career. She continued to record and to present through the 70s into the 80s, though they were quieter for Scylla. She and Bobby had four children, one stillborn daughter and three sons who are still living. Yet she was still a presence on TV. She released albums every couple of years. She did live shows. She did Christmas pantos in the UK. So she was always a presence, no matter what. We definitely see the passage of time through the 70s and 80s in her hair.
Yes. We haven't even mentioned her hair yet, which was a huge part of her iconic look, her blazing red hair, which she even dyed redder in the 60s. She was a natural redhead, but she went red, 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 red.
That wasn't any A&R person. That was her before she became famous. She just wanted to have bright red hair. So I love that about her. She always kept that as a trademark. And she had this cute little bob for a while. And then I believe she got a Vidal Sassoon haircut. So she got a very up to the minute.
The angular.
Short, angular.
So cute.
Yeah. I think her hair game devolved a bit in the 80s, but.
was very of the time, let's say.
It was of the time. But if she made any mistakes in her career, it would be whatever hairdresser she had around 1983. I don't know what happened there, so I don't know what happened. But that hair became part of who people knew her as. I mean, her career up until that moment was already incredibly notable. She was part of the British invasion, Merseyside, Friends of the Beatles, recorded all these Lennon McCartney tunes, and she had this variety show for years. But it wasn't until the 80s when her career had a bit of a renaissance and she transitioned into institution level in British television. For 20 years, between 1983 and 2003, Scylla dominated Saturday night TV in the UK. She was the host of multiple shows. So in one night, you might see Scylla more than once. Anybody who watched television, because I think there were only four stations at the time anyway, at least in the early days, you would know Scylla. She would be a face on your TV. And these were her main shows. The first one was called Surprise, Surprise. Anybody who was on December might know what Surprise, Surprise.
Surprise, Surprise.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I love it though, because it's I love seeing Scylla come up on my TikTok.
I know. I love it so much. The original show was aired from 1983 to 1997, and it was kind of a variety show. Scylla would surprise members of the public with wishes granted, surprise reunions between family members who hadn't seen each other in decades. And then she would also appear in different places singing about the surprise in sketches that were called Scyllagrams. So you would get a singing Scyllagram announcing your surprise, surprise.
Ah, I want one.
I know, me too. This show, you got to check it out because it has got some of the wildest mid-80s hair and fashion. It's you got to see it. Scylla's lovely. She's always lovely, but the clothes, oh my God.
She loved shoulder pads.
I mean, if you like 80s fashion, she was at the top of the game there. My God. Another show that I think people were probably more familiar with her on this, she was the host of the show Blind Date, which in itself is a British institution, from 1985 to 2003. That is the same as in the US we had Love Connection.
Oh, yeah.
So a bachelor or bachelorette would have three hidden potential dates, and he would ask them questions, or she would ask them questions, and then they would choose the date based on the answers, and they would meet, and then they would go on a date, and then they would come back and they would watch each other in these videotape clips analyzing how the date went. This was on for so many years, and I think it was on in different iterations even after Scylla left the show. This is so well known in the UK. And then the third show was called Scylla's Moment of Truth. This was only from 1998 to 2001. This was a game show where families could win prizes by successfully competing challenges. It was based on this Japanese game show. And I think it was a lot of work, honestly.
It seems like a lot of work.
Especially because people were used to just being surprised. Now they had to do the work themselves. It's tough.
Surprise, surprise.
God.
Surprise, surprise. Sorry, I'll stop.
You can't stop. Once it's in your head, it never leaves your head. Ever.
I know. Damn it.
So Scylla, over her lifetime, she hosted 500 of her own TV episodes and was a guest on at least 400 more episodes of other people's shows. She was the highest paid female performer on television, one of the most well-known personalities in the UK. As Alison mentioned earlier, she received an OBE, or Officer of the Most Excellent Order of the British Empire, for her services to entertainment. And I would imagine that at least half the people who knew her from Blind Date and Surprise, Surprise had no idea about her origins.
Yeah, I think that's probably the least known part of her career for a lot of people, for sure.
Which is crazy to me, just crazy.
I mean, it would be one thing if she were sort of obscure, but she had 40 top 10 hits. Like, come on.
Maybe that's just coming from a US point of view that we don't know how people knew her when they watched Blind Date. But I feel like you just watched Blind Date. Like, I don't know what
Chuck Woolery.
Yes. What did Chuck Woolery? I don't know what Chuck Woolery
did. I don't know. I don't know. I just know him from Love Connection, you
know?
Yeah.
He had a string of top 10 hits in the 50s and 60s. I don't know.
Oh my God. I wish that would be. I think the only thing I know about him otherwise is I think he's a Republican.
Great.
Anyway, but I digress.
Scylla's steady TV hosting gigs ended in 2003 in an absolutely baller move. Scylla gave her audience her own surprise, surprise moment, announcing on Blind Date that the show that she was hosting at that moment would be her last. She was unhappy with changes to the show format, but no one knew that she was going to make an announcement that she was quitting until she announced it live on the air. It is quite funny to watch everybody else around her freaking out and trying to maintain stiff upper lip.
Mic drop.
It was amazing.
She's so badass.
She really is. Like, she does not give a fuck, which is such a huge part of her personality, too.
Yes. Oh, my God. Totally. She don't give a F.
And you see it on, like, if you watch episodes of Blind Date, there's one with, look up the cheesy DJ one. From like 2001.
Say no more.
And awesome. This guy sucks. He sucks so hard. And he's saying a few things that are you insulting Scylla? Like, what are you saying right there? And
oh my God, I'm going to have to look this up.
She gave it right back to him and it was hilarious.
Oh my God. I love it. I can't wait to watch that.
Yeah, you will enjoy this one. But despite leaving, Scylla did continue to be a presence in British TV for the rest of her life. Lots of guest appearances. In 2013, ITV aired a special in honor of Scylla's 50 years in show business called The One and Only Scylla Black, where Scylla took viewers back to her home on Scotty Road, or at least to Scotty Road itself. She did a guest cameo on the long-running soap opera Coronation Street, which is something she had always wanted to do.
I was going to say, I'm surprised it took her that long, because Coronation Street's been on 150 years.
I think she was so famous as herself that it would probably have been very hard to do anything as a character after that.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
She seems very overjoyed to finally be able to be on Coronation Street. So it's lovely. Scylla, unfortunately, very sadly died in 2015 at the very young age of 72. Her service in Liverpool was attended by thousands, and condolence messages were sent from luminaries across the country in all fields, including then Prime Minister David Cameron, of course, Paul McCartney, Ringo Starr, who were friends with her for life, Cliff Richard, another longtime friend of hers, Burt Bacharach, and you know many others who worked with her over the years in the variety show world. And if you look at her headstone, it's engraved with lyrics from some of her most enduring songs, including Step Inside Love, You're My World, and Alfie.
Oh, I think we need to make a special trip and visit Scylla.
Oh, definitely. Absolutely.
Even though Scylla's gone, she's not really gone from pop culture because, as we've mentioned 3,000 times on this episode, there was an incredible ITV, I think it was a BBC earlier, but it was ITV, biopic Scylla from 2014, starring the amazing Sheridan Smith. And I really think this was like the role that Sheridan Smith was meant to play. She plays Scylla. It's a three-part documentary. Erica.
Did I write that? Yes. I did. Documentary.
Yeah. Oh my God. I love it. Okay. It's a three-part miniseries detailing Scylla's life. So it goes from her teenage years through Brian's death and then the very start of her television career. In fact, I think the last scene is her singing Step Inside Love for her TV show, her variety show.
Correct. I watched it this weekend.
Oh my God. I need to rewatch it again. I mean, I have it memorized, so I can watch it in my head anytime. You'll laugh, you'll cry. I cry every time with the Brian scenes.
Oh my God. And, it's so sad.
Oh my God. So fucking good. It is the best thing you will ever watch. Again, worth subscribing to Acorn TV. I think it's, well, you found it streaming somewhere.
I did find it. I found it right now. It's on Daily Motion. So give that
fantastic.
So you don't
need to pay for Acorn. Yeah. So in 2017, Scylla the musical premiered in Liverpool, which I really wanted to see. I was there in 2017, but I swear to God, like a week after it closed. And that was based on the ITV movie. And it was set to be remounted in Liverpool in 2020 with Sheridan Smith reprising her role alongside Andrew Lansdale, again in the role of Brian. So fucking good.
I know.
But of course, 2020, COVID killed it.
This is a travesty. It never came back.
It is a tragedy. It is both a tragedy and a travesty. It is awful.
It needs to come back.
Yes, exactly. It's like the 10-year anniversary this year of the Scylla miniseries, which is insane.
And, you know, the 60th anniversary of Scylla's career in show business. We're celebrating all this Beatles stuff. Let's celebrate her part in the British invasion.
Yeah. What the fuck? Yes. Come on, Sheridan. Well, okay, Sheridan Smith, if you ever hear this, we want you on the podcast, number one. Number two, please, please, please be Scylla again. You are Scylla.
Please. Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay. I need to take a breath. Okay. So also in 2017, one of my favorite things ever, the statue of Scylla was unveiled in Liverpool's Matthews Street, and it was commissioned by her sons as a thank you to the city, which is so sweet. It is a beautiful, beautiful statue. If you go up to it and look closely, her dress is made up of different squares and they depict images from her life and career. There's a really sweet one with her and Brian, which of course I love. Yeah, and the text in these squares is set in relief and include her catchphrases. which is so endearing from programs she presented. There are little trivia facts like her wedding anniversary dates. There's quotes from Bobby and her close friends, including, of course, song lyrics, titles, that kind of thing. But it's really intricate. It's like, I really want that dress. If I could make it, I would. And it's really cool. It's like a sort of a little collared Mary Quant type dress, which is so apt for Scylla's style in the 60s. I didn't know this the last time I saw the statue, but there's a flower on the base of the sculpture. It depicts a flower from Scylla and Bobby's wedding bouquet.
Oh,
so cute.
Do you think about it? It's from her three sons, and they're commemorating both their parents.
I love it. It's so sweet. It's so sweet. And of course, Bobby, you know, appears on the dress. So it's lovely. So the artist, the principal artist of Scylla's statue is Emma Rogers, and she has made lots of artwork featured in Marvel's The Guardians of the Galaxy. So interesting. And of course, Emma collaborated with artist Andy Edwards, who is super famous in Liverpool for sculpting the renowned Beatles statue at Liverpool's waterfront at Albert Dock, and also the Brian Epstein statue.
Yeah, I was going to ask if he worked on both of them.
He did. Yeah, they're spectacular. So that makes total sense. And Scylla's is also just fantastic. So Andy Edwards, we should have him on. That would be amazing to talk to him about that stuff. Yeah. But he is absolutely prolific in Liverpool, does such incredible work. And of course, one of the features of the Scylla statue is her iconic hairstyle, which we were just talking about.
But her original one, which was awesome.
Yes, yes, yes. and it was inspired by the contact sheet of photographs from the first time that Vidal Sassoon cut her hair into that iconic sort of bob style. And when Scylla, quote unquote, the statue, was being modeled in clay, Alan Henry, who's a hairstylist, styled the clay to ensure that when cast, her hair fell in a natural way.
Isn't that cool?
So incredible. Yeah, that is awesome. I'm sure Alan Henry had never done that before.
Right.
It probably won't do it again. So funny.
The statue is something you can just look at for hours, get lost in. I remember when you went to the UK, and I think it was 2018, you sent me the most adorable picture.
Oh, yeah.
Little girl hugging Scylla. It was so cute.
Oh, my gosh. I think I posted it on our Instagram. I'll dig it up again and post it because it is so cute. And I don't know who the little girl was. She just walked up and gave Scylla the biggest hug. And I was just like, so cute. Aww. Yeah. Oh, it touched my heart.
I hope people see that statue and they know that's the same woman from Blind Date, that they understand and they connect.
Oh my God, totally.
This crazy career she had.
Can you imagine if there's like an 80s Scylla statue? And like her stance from Surprise, Surprise, Surprise.
Oh my God. Oh my God. With the hair.
That would be amazing. Yeah. With the hair.
They'll have to do another hair modeling with all of that feathering.
Yeah. And, oh my gosh, yes. Alan Henry, come back. You gotta do some more.
Yeah, so other than the statue, which of course you can see if you go to Liverpool, there was another Scylla. This is actually a documentary. This was called Scylla, The Lost Tapes. This is from 2020. And her family released some previously unseen family home movies. There were tributes from longtime friends like Cliff Richard. So, you know, that's a nice continuation of her life, because we think of her. This is kind of fun because we think of her as like Liverpool Scylla, Merseybeat Scylla, or Blind Date Scylla. This is a lot of the time kind of in the 70s, too, when she was home with her family and you had a whole different series of hairstyles. So good to see.
Yes. Lots of hair talk with Scylla, because damn, like if there's anybody who needs it, you know,
I love it.
Her hair to be discussed. Yes.
Yes.
Scylla.
Yes. Yes. And of course, we already mentioned this a few times, but Scylla came to public notice again late last year as part of a meme where she was singing the theme from Surprise, Surprise, green screened over any number of situations. And they are wonderful and hilarious. And go search that on TikTok. Just search Surprise, Surprise. Yeah. You'll find all of them if you didn't.
You'll run into it. If you don't search it, you will run into it because it's ubiquitous. I was like super thrilled when I saw it for the first time. I'm like, what? Scylla's a meme? That's awesome.
Her official website, which I believe is run by her family, which gave us a lot of this information that we're saying, here, especially about the statue. They compiled a video of their favorite TikToks from the meme. So you can find that, I think, on their YouTube. It's hilarious.
Oh my God, I love her family.
That's great.
That's so great.
So yeah. So Scylla. Scylla is wonderful. I think she needs to be talked about a lot more than she is. Scylla is important. She's very important. She had a huge impact in the UK. She was the number one selling female pop star of the 1960s. She was the first woman to have host her own TV series. She was, might still be, the most watched female presenter of all time. She was the only woman in Brian's artist stable. She had a unique voice among singers at the time. And I think one that kind of paved the way between what women sounded like in the 60s and the 50s and what they sounded like in the 70s, 80s, and beyond. And I think, too, that while many people tried to hide their working class roots to be more presentable to the general public at that time, including some friends of ours from the Beatles universe, looking at you, George, looking at you, Brian, looking at you a little bit too, Paul, Scylla's charm was specifically side because eye. Of it.
Yeah. And Scylla, you know, she went back a number of times to her home, as we mentioned at the top of the show, above the barbershop in Scotty Road. She would say also about that home, like, they didn't even have a front door. They didn't have an indoor bathroom. It was really bare bones. But she went back a number of times, took film crews back there to show them where she came up from, you know, which was, by all, you know, all iterations of the word, very, very humble.
Yeah. Yeah. Her mother said the only thing she ever wanted was a front door. Can you imagine?
I hope I'm going to bet her mother got that front door.
She did. Scylla bought her parents a house not long after she started making some money. So she finally did get her front door. But unfortunately, Scylla never got to have a boy walk her home to her front door because she was already with Bobby by that point. So many, many awkward, you know, I live in Scotty Road. I'm Catholic. I don't have a front door. You can walk me home if you want, but those things are happening. So
all these red flags that aren't actually red flags, but, you know, were back then.
It's just a lot of work just because of her house, unfortunately.
Oh, my gosh. But, you know, Scylla, we love Scylla. She is, you know, is one of our favorites. I'm so glad we finally got to do this episode.
I know, me too. And if you don't know Scylla's musical catalog, if you don't know her from anything other than Blind Date, go back and listen to the songs. The songs she did, the Lennon McCartney songs, the Burt Bacharach stuff, all of it. Just listen to how much of a treasure her voice is.
Yes, so great.
And then go listen to some Surprise, Surprise on TikTok.
It's going to be stuck in my head all day. Surprise, Surprise. Oh my God, I'm sorry. Stop. I said that like three Surprise, Surprises ago, but you know, I'm really going to stop.
You know, I'm ending the show with that now.
Okay, good. Good. That's how it should end.
Absolutely. Well, surprise, surprise. And thanks again for listening to BC the Beatles. As always, subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening right now. Give us a rating and review so other Beatle maniacs can find us.
And follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter/X, and TikTok. We'll be posting photos and more from this episode and beyond. And remember, you can always email us at bcthebeatles@gmail.com too. And we will see you next time.
Bye. Bye. Surprise, surprise.